Ready to launch?
Wait, we're launched. We're live. We're recording.
Welcome to Rated Gen X, where three friends who grew up moving in stereo go back on a journey in time to ride some tasty waves and catch the cool buzz of the iconic films that shaped our lives.
So every week we watch an iconic film of the 80s through our current, but maybe a little jaded lens.
And then we see how our memories stack up with our current point of view in the modern
world. Or if we live through it.
Right. Know. Or should we cancel ourselves?
So what are we doing today, Curtis?
We are going back to Cali for Amy Heckerling's Fast Times at Ridgemont High, written by Cameron Crowe. Starring Sean Penn, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Judge Reinhold,
and Phoebe Cates.
And there it is.
Sorry.
So why did you pick it, Curtis? This is your pick. This is Curtis' pick. Why'd you pick it, Curtis?
You were talking about movies that kind of define the generation. I was thinking about movies my parents liked, you know, ones that were like indicative of their generation and like, you know, Big Chill and American Graffiti. And I'm kind of terrified to admit, but I think Fast Times at Ridgemont High is the Gen X American Graffiti. Like, is this sort of like the overall snapshot of a generation? I wonder.
I think that's a good comparison. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I would draw that comparison.
Because you always think John Hughes, but wait a minute.
It feels like an authentic look and an unselfconscious look. So they didn't create the movie saying we're going to make the iconic movie of this generation.
Yeah.
But they might have just done it.
You know, from my, you know, and it wasn't like candy coated or overly romanticized view from what I recall either, but you know,
not at all.
What was it 1982? Well, I mean,
we're 11 years old. I mean, we're going to own up how old we are. We were, right. It wasn't us. It was us looking ahead to high
school.
Exactly. Like, this is what high school's like. And at the time, let's face it, like, if you were 11, you could most likely get into a movie like this at a theater, even though it was a hard R. And in fact, at one point, was going to be
rated. You could?
Yeah.
Just by yourself? Really?
Because I did.
Yeah, you did. But I didn't realize. I thought someone went with you. You got in by yourself?
Well, we were with my friend's older brother, but they were in high school, but they were not over 18. Like the adult, the like supervising adult, a high school kid. And he took his younger brother's friends to go see it.
Okay. Well, this was
when I was 11, I looked like I was six. So I would have not gotten in. And they would have been like, no way.
So now you look like you're 12, right?
Yeah. Now I look like I'm 12.
What's a candy?
I'll be honest. My memories of this movie now, obviously I saw it when I was really young. And then my memories are a lot based on seeing it on video during during our later teenagers and so forth, because it was a massive VHS hit. And it was played a lot in junior high and high school. Some parts of the tape apparently really got worn out. We're talking about famously.
Walk a chick around.
Something that happened. Apparently video stores had a real issue with this because of repeat viewings.
Why is it broken at 10 minutes? Yeah,
it's broken exactly the same spot every time. We got to buy another copy.
Oh, right. One of the most paused moments in cinematic history.
That's what it's
It's funny. We had this thing in my town in Pennsylvania, my small town in Pennsylvania. I don't know if any other place had this. Oh, okay, so we had this place called Nickelodeon where it had these individual rooms. They were maybe the size of like a small bedroom, and they had built-in couches and a VHS and a TV. You went out and you rented the video, and you went. It sounds really.
That's, I mean,
there's kids, but it sounds gross. It sounds like something you find in like Times Square back in the day.
Yeah, no, that is exactly what that is. I don't know who thought of the idea to convert that into like a kids thing. They're like, hey,
yeah,
there's a TV network called Nickelodeon. We should open one here because that is definitely an adult movie setup. That is like,
yeah, it is. But as kids, that's where we went as kids, like in junior high school, because I
look into the
middle school, junior high school. So we would go there, and I think that's where I saw it. I think I saw it like with a bunch of 13-year-olds. I think we were even out, and I'm guessing that's where we saw it.
Yeah, I definitely saw it on VHS. I only snuck into a movie once, and that was, you know, my friend and I convinced these strangers to pretend they were our parents to buy the tickets to get into, I think it was Breakfast Club, yeah.
I'm going to take us back just to 1 second about this little Nickelodeon thing you're talking about. Uh-huh. I think that they were doing something very unsavory in that space. So just to set that
up. I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, I'm sure there's.
So Aaron, did you have a question to ask us?
Uh-oh.
What is my question? No, I don't have a question to ask.
Is this the part where you're going to pass the buck to us?
No, you asked a question to ask.
Tell me what question you're not going to ask. Aaron,
I'm not telling you, no, that's the point. I am like, why don't you tell me? Why don't you read me the question you don't want to read?
Right, let's go back the curtain.
behind the scenes
comment we had before the show. Aaron is not comfortable asking our pop quiz question, so she's going to sit this one out.
Oh, wow.
It's just going to be between Curtis and me.
Yeah.
However, we are still going to...
Let Aaron provide the deep psychoanalysis that we need.
You guys go ahead.
She's like, it'll be obvious why she doesn't want to...
I'm going to help. Help.
So, Curtis, you and me. Hey, before we watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High, let's talk about the 5-point plan of Mike Damone. Particularly point five, in which he says, when it comes to making out, whenever possible, put on side one of Led Zeppelin 4, which is just the funniest thing ever, because Led Zeppelin could not be less sexy. Led Zeppelin is the least sexy music. But the question was for us, the guys, to talk about sort of what, when we were at that age and aspirational and trying to be little Lotharios, like, when we were in a scenario such as that, what was our go-to music choice? Like, what music would we put on?
Unfortunate everyone can't see my eye rolls.
I know. Yeah, Aaron, we can hear that.
We can feel your eye rolls across time.
I'm going to remind you that I knew you all back then. So go for it. Let's hear it.
The sound of bowling balls you hear are not bowling balls. They're Aaron's eyes just rolling in her skull.
Cling, cling, cling.
All right. Well, I can't wait.
So let's take a break and check out Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
And we'll be back.
Hey, podcast ad writer. Tired of racking your brain for hilarious ad ideas? Well, say hello to your new best friend, the Laugh-O-Matic AI. Picture this. You're staring at a blank page, trying to come up with the perfect ad script. Suddenly, a light bulb goes off. No, not literally. That would be dangerous. It's the Laugh-O-Matic AI coming to your rescue. With just a few clicks, this magical AI generates side-splitting ad copy that will have your listeners rolling on the floor with laughter. It's like having a comedy writer in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? Take your podcast ads from meh to memorable with Laugh-O-Matic AI. Your listeners will thank you, and your funny bone will never be the same again. Or is that just the comedy writer in your pocket? Get ready to LOL your way to podcasting success. Try the Laugh-O-Matic AI today.
All right, we're back, guys. And so before we dive into the movie, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Gabe.
All right. So I'm not proud of this. So I always found that putting on some Weird Al Yankovic really set the tune, really got everybody's like juices flowing in the right direction. It's really sexy. That was my good. Thank you. Now because at the time, like, so in high school was like transitional music period for me. A lot of people were experimenting with different types of music. I grew up being more of like a classic prog rock type of guy. So the danger of playing that is like you're gonna sit there and try to like mansplain like Rush 2112 to a woman and be like, it's really deep, and then here's the Pink Floyd album, like here's the whole story, and it's like a 90-minute lecture from like a really depressed teenager. So that like
what
never
kind of rock? I don't even understand what word you said. What was the
prog
word?
Prog.
Like, it was like, when
progressive.
Band,
like, yeah.
Oh, band, progressive. Yeah. Oh. So, is that like indie? Yeah. Forget I asked.
No, I know. For me, I thought he was talking about like a Fraggle Rock Muppet.
Yeah, I was really in for a second. That was my second No, but like it's like highly technical. It's got like amazing time changes. Like, yes,
okay,
King Crimson, that whole thing. And then you're never gonna win with Steely Dan. Like Steely Dan is like a just total, you're just gonna, the date is over if you put some Steely Dan on. But it was, we were also coming of age and when all that really great first wave music was coming out. So for me, putting on something like The Cure or The Smiths or Depeche Mode always was kind of like, it was cool and safe. And it could be like, if you got friend zoned, it didn't feel like you were trying to make a move. Like, it's not like you put on Barry White.
Wow. Don't you really put a lot of thought into that, Gabe.
Don't cancel me.
All right.
What was your go-to jam?
Well, I'll tell you this. If things are going to suddenly get romantic, for me, it was spontaneous, not planned. And I'll tell you what, time stops and you can't hear anything but the rhythm of our own energies.
That's right. See,
but all through high school, even till college, I was kind of like the Mike Ratner, like kind of shy, nervous. And I'm looking back and talking to friends from like high school and college, like I was like unknowingly like putting people in the friend zone. Like, oh my God, I didn't know you were interested, you know, da, da, da. And like the first time I ever like made out with someone was probably eighth grade, and it freaked me out enough that I probably wasn't pursuing it. And I remember it was like a, you know, weird house party, and suddenly the girl I'm dating, like she throws a blanket over us and like sticks her tongue in my mouth. And I'm like, what are you doing? And I remember there the song Tom Sawyer by Rush was cranking. So like for the rest of my life, whenever a time that song comes on the radio, all I can think of is like that. Ew, it's like warm liver in my mouth. What are you doing? You know,
that's funny. That's
so cute. I was like such a prude, for lack of a better term, all through high school, just such a chicken, like, oh God, this is scary stuff, you know. So
catch the spit.
That's the honest answer. That's the honest answer, because this was such bullshit. Reading.
Aaron approves.
Yeah, no, it was an honest answer, because I'm reading this. I'm like, you guys are so full of shit. Like, you guys are so, yeah, like,
that's like, the whole like, point.
What Curtis is talking about is honest. And that's, yeah, like, that's exactly what it was. You know, it's funny, because watching this movie, I just thought to myself, like, they were way more sophisticated than anyone I knew was, than anyone. I mean, I don't know where this
all the effort going into trying
happened at age 15. I don't know. Like
that. This is though. Kind of, so I do say, and we've had this experience, right? Yeah. There are kids from certain pockets of the country. So if you knew kids from New York City when they were 12, it was like, you know, an Iowa 18. Like, yes. So. In yeah. This area of California, very much like they were accelerated. Like there's no doubt about it. Like they are at an advanced stage. So
yeah.
Right?
That's definitely.
I remember when I moved to New York and I was like 22 and I started working in a restaurant, and this girl I worked with, like her younger brother, who was like 16, 17, would come with all his friends and hang out. And it was after I got to know them, like, it's like they were. Had already experienced stuff that I wasn't going to see or experience until I was 25. And they were, you know, that was in high school. So life moves like pretty fast. You know,
I was 25 when the movie Kids came out, and I was taken. That's all I'm saying. You know, I was learning.
Have you guys seen Euphoria at all? Have you watched that at all?
It's not age appropriate for me. I don't watch it. But the reason I don't watch it is because I do think men my age who watch that show are
something wrong.
It feels perverted.
They're in danger of moving into the territory of the guy who ran that little Nickelodeon show.
Yeah, I hear you.
I do think it's very realistic, and I want the kids. I think the kids should enjoy a show like that, but I do not feel appropriate watching it. I turned it off. Like, I'm like, it's not for me.
Right. Well, even watching this, I was like, okay, she's supposed to be like Jennifer Jason Leigh's character is supposed to be like 15 in that.
Yeah.
Showing a nudity of a 15-year-old. I mean that. I'm like, was there any controversy about that?
Oh, right. Yeah. She's
there was tremendous.
But because the actress was of age, whereas Brooke Shields was not of age when she did her thing.
Right.
That's the difference.
Difference. And interestingly, there's a deep dive into this. When our good friend, I'm dropping it again, Karina Longworth's podcast, she talks specifically about Phoebe Cates and Brooke Shields, and then Fast Times. And there's a window of time because Brooke Shields was 13, 14, and they were pairing her off with actors who were significantly older than her. And then they were trying to use body doubles. At one point in Blue Lagoon, they had they wanted to use a 30-year-old body double to double for a teenage girl. And that's wildly inappropriate for all sorts of reasons. So you can say morally and ethically, like, oh, it's the body of an adult.
Right.
But that's even more pervy because it's only justifying the voyeuristic sort of pedophilic desire of sort of older men to sexualize girls, which is cool.
Yeah. So, okay. So let me ask you guys this. I'm making my own questions now since I don't
know. We're diving right in. We're deep. We're in the deep end. Let's just go. We're in the deep end of the pool already.
Come on. Let's do this.
Well, okay. Well, I'm not a parent. Okay. So I'm not a parent. You're both parents. So, I mean, watching this movie, how would you feel like, you saw it when you were 11, Gabe, would you feel like you would let your 11-year-old children, they're not 11, but if they were,
explains a lot, first of all, that Gabe managed to see it when he was 11. So now everything makes sense to me.
We all were digging Spicoli. Like, they marketed this specifically to kids for that reason. The character was the hero. Weird. The TV ads were 99% Spicoli.
Right. True.
And all the catchphrases. So there's a couple really interesting things about your question, Aaron. And I will say Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and Curtis hit on it earlier, stands apart from the whole slew of other schlocky, shitty teen comedies that were coming out at this time. So this is the same time as Porky's. Literally a movie about sexual harassment. It is nothing but pervy boys from the point of view of pervy boys being like, boys will be boys. And in fact, it came up during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, because there's a character in the movie called Kavanaugh. But the whole movie about how boys can sexually harass girls and getting laid is like the conquest and the girls are just prey. This movie is strongly from the point of view of women and girls, mm-hmm. which I think is a total testament to Amy Heckerling and quite honestly Cameron Crowe's sensitivity as a writer, that the sexual nature of the movie, while frank, I think is not romantic at all. I think it's really blunt. And if anything, all of the myth and romance around sort of losing your virginity, everything is handled here with just utter frankness. Mm-hmm. It's blunt. When she's in the dugout in particular, just on the baseball field, she looks up at the roof of the, you see.
It says surf Nazis.
And that's exactly, that's her point of view. You're not seeing it at all.
Highly unromantic the first time was, right?
So unromantic. And then obviously the scene in the pool house later, up until that point, he's been all game. He's been all talk. Mm-hmm. He has the 5-point plan. And then not only does he not deliver, it's awkward, but he's over in 3 seconds. And then he's Mr. I got to get out of here. And is to me, that is very realistic.
Yeah.
So his game went completely away. He's all facade and all style and no substance. Mm-hmm. And that's meaningful, because I think it's a precautionary tale. I think if you're a 11-year-old girl and you watch this movie, you're going to be protected and knowledgeable about what your first experience should be like than the naive Jennifer Jason Leigh character in this movie. To me, it's a cautionary tale. So I would absolutely show this to my 11-year-old daughter. She owns her part of the process, but also allowing a girl, a female character in a movie, to have sexual desire and not be perceived as a slut, not be slut shamed, is rare, right? The Porky's movies are all about conquest. So if you're a bimbo who's willing to put out, that's the goal. That's you become the object of their affection. She is a fully three-dimensional character who has reservations, regrets, and still wanted to be with this guy after the awkward experience. He's the one who revealed his true self to her. She really wanted something nice, and it turned out she wanted, quote unquote.
She says that anyone can have sex. I want something more. I want a relationship. So there was through all the teenage crudeness, there was a nice golden lesson.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I just, I think about those two characters. And I think, you know, if they're real life girls, I feel really sad for them, because it's like, why are you doing this? What reason are you doing this? Why do you feel like you need to do this? It just seemed like, you know, they just, and they don't get into that. They're not getting into like, but I find in my head, like, are her parents ignoring her? What is going on here that she feels she has to do this? Like yeah. you know, I just feel like they're just extremely dysfunctional as far as the need to like this, I don't know, need for validation or what, like what it is. You have Phoebe Cates feeling the need to make this guy in Chicago, her fiance, who clearly is probably not her fiance and doesn't give a shit about her, but she feels the need to have this fiance. And I feel the need to, you know, and I, as Jennifer Jason Leigh's character, I, you know, I feel the need to have this and I feel the need to have that. And it's just like, why do you need all this, girls?
You said something earlier, like about parents, and like just occurred, it's like the Peanuts and Gen X, you know, 101, there's no parents around.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think
where, you, just where are your parents?
Yeah, it didn't occur to me when I saw it the first time that the parents weren't around. I thought that part was great. Now yeah, I'm
you
like,
never, am I right?
Like, where are your parents?
You never see your fucking parents. Right? You never see a parent, right?
They're gone for the weekend. Yes.
Yeah, you don't see them at all.
There's not a single parent in the movie.
Not even a wah, 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 wah.
There's adults here in the form of teachers who form those figures, but even the only adult character, even at Spicoli's house, is dad, his brother yelling at dad and then saying mom and dad are going to kill you, whatever. But like, you never physically see any of their parents.
Yeah.
To me, the Phoebe Cates character is.
I don't hear you.
I've revealed myself. When she reads the note, we can be adults about this, but it's so immature of you to not want to go to prom with me. Like that, there's something like, or not to attend my high school graduation. Like that is so funny. Like she says, this doesn't occur between adults. You're like, no shit, it does not occur. She says, something about not attending my graduation. This doesn't occur between adults is the note I took. And she's like, yes, it doesn't occur between adults because in an adult relationship, one of them is not graduating from high school. Like it's a revealing statement that's ironic. And she's trying to be so mature about it. But that very lack of maturity is what shows up in that moment. And she's crying about this total loser.
Right.
20s is dating a high school student.
Which is, and then she's like, I wrote another version where I called him an asshole. Should I use that one? And Jennifer, she's like, no, the other one sounds more adult or something. Like,
yeah.
This one's so good.
Yeah.
So do we just want to...
clear. I mean, it's so clear why. I mean, that really launched Sean Penn. And it's very clear why.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I have to wonder, did they know that? And was that something they realized after it was shot? They're like, oh man, he stole it.
But just the casting as a whole in this movie is amazing.
You got Eric Stoltz.
What makes Sean Penn's performance better in retrospect is when this broke, he was a young teen actor, right? He was up and coming, and this was one of his first really big roles. But knowing how serious he is and how rarely he does comedy makes this all the more impressive.
True. So
he has done comic style performances and a few other things, but he's also willing to kind of do the work and get deep into character. So he'll play a really goofy character or he'll do a very method version of certain characters, but he's committed 100% so that he lives so naturally in the Spicoli character that you almost think they just found this guy on the beach. That's how good he is. He's
well, but wait, he did, but he bases it. He's talked about this. How much was it written? Because he said he based it on someone. So it feels that there's a real life Spicoli that he personally knows.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they had a character, but he really brought it. He's the one who brought
he delivered.
Yeah. They're probably surrounded by Spicolis back then in the high school they got pulled out of in California.
Or yeah.
So his two sidekicks also in their first big roles, Anthony Edwards, who went on to tremendous success on TV show, Eric Stoltz, another huge actor. Which is great. Like they're in these tiny minor roles. And you're like, oh, speaking of other tiny minor roles, first screen appearance of the greatest American actor, Nicolas Cage.
The greatest American
would have gotten a bigger role, according to the casting director, but he was 17 at the time and it would have it limited his screen time. So because he wasn't 18, he was put in sort of smaller character role. There are three Academy Award winning actors in this film. So you had Nicolas Cage, obviously Sean Penn, and then Forrest Whitaker, who has a big role as a big supporting role as the football player. And those are the three winners. And then Jennifer Jason Leigh has been nominated but never won, at least I couldn't find. I wonder if anybody
There's a lot of like whatever happened to the other people that were the leads that didn't, you know, but
not, but I wonder if anybody here has a story about maybe auditioning for
I had the honor of when I was in New York auditioning for a movie called Clueless, but Amy Heckling, I didn't even realize, directed Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but I remember she was really like, she was cool, she was hip, she had a strong personality. She wasn't like a pushover. She was like a strong person. I'm not going to say like, oh, for, you know, strong woman, et cetera, et cetera. But it was so funny. So I had auditioned for the part of like the rich friend/boyfriend. I barely remember the movie. I have a problem like watching movies that I don't get parts in. There's like a bunch of those. But I remember Amy Heckling, that's great. Can you do that again? But like you're stoned. Like she has like a kind of a New Jersey accent. So I was like, okay. I was like, oh, she wants to see if like the Spicoli treatment's going to work. So anyway, I didn't get the part, but it was cool to have read for it and got close. I actually later on became friends with the guy that got the part.
So how many people are in the room when you do that? Like, so she's in the room and who else is in the room?
With that, it was just her and like one or two other people and they put me on camera. But I remember when it would be terrifying. Like you'd go read for the casting director and then they would call you back. And then it might be like, with the director, and then they might call you back again. And then it's like with the director and the producers, which is like terrifying because there's like 10 people staring at you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it took a lot to get used to.
Do you know what you're reading ahead of time ever?
Usually, you do.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
But what used to happen was, and you had to learn how they call it cold reading and sight reading because, you know, because you might go into an audition, you've already prepared it. They don't expect you to memorize. It's different nowadays with the self-tape stuff. I hate it.
Oh, okay.
Back in the day, you would go and, you know, my agent would get me the script, like, oh, the script's left for you in the lockbox. So I'd like go like get the script.
Really? They put it in a lockbox like you were a spy or something? Like,
well, because I, you know, they would leave this. Yeah, because it wasn't, we didn't have internet. Yeah, so you had to physically go to my agency and pick up the fucking script. And then like, I try and read the whole thing. Like I really needed to like, get every little piece of information I could about the character just to do like a 5-page scene. But what happened is sometimes if you're at the audition and they'll go, oh, okay, cool. Can you read this and this? Like, which is a good sign because they want to see more of you, but you got like, you're like got 5-10 minutes to go sit in the hall and look at it and make choices.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of it, like, you know, I remember reading for like Amy Heckling for that and Empire Records, a bunch of team, you know, and that was an interesting thing because I'm like in my early 20s till I was like 30, I was still reading for like teenage parts. But back then you didn't have any, you couldn't Google the person you're reading for, be like, oh shit, you know.
Right. Yeah.
See what they look like. Like now you can like sort of forward team and I can look up like who's, I'll get an audition. I can like find out like who the assistant producer is and if they know somebody or whatever.
Yeah, everybody's got, we got so much more information now than we used to.
We're big brothers here.
The technology in this movie, and this is the thing I've loved thus far about, you know, rewatching some of these old movies, is the technology in the movies. The main goal, let's not forget, of Rat, who is also, again, one of the lead characters. It's such a weird nickname for this character, but apparently his nickname was also Rat.
Yeah.
Is getting the phone number, like, closing the deal at that point was like, I got to get that phone number. Like, I'm going to come away with some digits. And that sequence is so awkward, but felt very real to me.
Like, oh, so much cultural stuff. But like, you know, that montage at the beginning where they show like the kids at school and their day to day goofiness happening. Did you catch the bit when they're all outside and goofing off and someone slaps a sign on one guy's back that says, I'm a homo?
Yes.
Which was like, immediately struck me like, oh my God, in the 80s, it was like homophobia was the norm.
Homophobia. Yeah. There's another scene.
Well, Sean Penn shouts the F word. And when he's doing his interview.
By the surfer like, that's how you demean them. Be like, those guys are that was just standard. Like that, the intrinsic homophobia was just part and parcel. What's interesting today, and this is where people would have a strange reaction, we're going to use our 21st century lens, a movie like this today would definitely have gay characters, or at least a gay character, And yet there's people who would be like, oh, they're shoving it down our throats. Now, I will make the argument that a film like this, by having casual homophobia, might be shoving homophobia down people's throats. Mm-hmm. So let's just look at this as progress. In my opinion, this is our awareness. We're so in tune to it now. Yep. And wanting to be more inclusive. The other major sidestep in this movie is there are a number of Black characters mm-hmm. in the story, but yeah. they're totally on the margins, the sidelines. We know nothing about them other than the one guy's a football player, the one guy's the younger brother football player. Oh, look, there's people at the dance. There's a bass player. There's a whole series of cheerleaders who are Black. There's Black people in the stands. But we know nothing about their story, right? This is a story that is totally choosing to focus on the central, centered, white, privileged storyline, which is pretty standard for the time. Mm-hmm. And our just awareness about what's missing is as important, I believe, as sort of what's shown. And so I just think, I don't think it's a criticism like the movie is less for it, but I think it's very much a product of its time. And I love that we can recognize that in retrospect and at least be aware of what that means.
Yeah, it is. It's 100% a product of this time. But yeah, well, you and I were talking like earlier before we started the recording about like just fashion and stuff. And you were talking about how, I remember you were like, it was so on point. And I'm like, and it made me laugh because I'm thinking, you know, that occurred to me too. But then I realized like, and you said something called it a period piece. And I'm like, no, that's just what people wore when they recorded it. It wasn't a period. Like there was I had to remind myself and I'm like, oh my God, they nailed the fashion. And I'm like, oh wait, no, that's like if that's what it was literally recorded. It's not really a period piece when they're just representing 1982, which is when it was filmed.
Even John Hughes movies, I think, are more art directed than this. Like this feels very much a snapshot of the era at the time. So I do think that they were playing for more, not telling the actors to show up in regular clothes, but I think a lot of the extras and background people are just wearing what they would normally wear. So therefore it feels very authentic, as opposed to when they art direct something like that now, you'd have too much. But the Pat Benatar thing, there's three girls in the high school who are now going for Pat Benatar look, which is so perfect because they show up throughout the whole movie. And every time I laughed every time they showed up. Like I laughed every single time.
When I first saw Damone, you know, and he's got his like perfect, you know, his outfits just so with the tie and the little bit of button flare on the thing. But I'll tell you what, like walking around my son's high school, I see kids kind of dressed similarly more now than like kind of like Damone and stuff. Like it seemed like kind of modern or. You know, things go in cycles or is 80s in vogue and these kids are clocking that. And I don't know.
So the way he described his role is he's East Coast also. So he's a transplant. He's a little bit more like the Ralph Macchio character in Karate Kid.
Right.
You can tell he actually does not come from a privileged background. He is a hustler. He is, you know, he is the guy doing second market ticketing. We're not going to use the racist term for that either. But his being a little older could also be like, he moved from the East Coast. He might have gotten set back a grade in school too, but he also reads older, right? I mean, the one who's really too old to be in the movie is Judge Reinhold. Judge Reinhold was, he's meant to feel more mature. He's the one who's, you know, got career aspiration, who's giving himself these speeches, but also at the same time is weirdly like so immature with his own sexual maturity. Like he's been in a relationship for 2 years, but he's not in an honest relationship. He's fantasizing about his sister's best friend. I mean, these are all really troubling signs.
He's sort of the Holden Caulfield of the piece where he's trapped between trying to become an adult and still do childish stuff.
Yes, that's a great observation. I think Holden Caulfield is a great example. And if you scan the film carefully, there is a scene when they're in the gym where somebody is reading Catcher in the Rye in the stands. It was very subtle, but I saw it. I was like, look at that moment. And I use Catcher in the Rye. I don't know if I've talked to you guys about this before, but that's like a benchmark for me. Mm-hmm. That when you read it and you're younger.
Yeah.
So let's say if you go see Fast Times Runs Behind, you're 11.
Right.
Like certain characters seem heroic. When you see it, when you're in high school or appear with him, you understand a lot more about what he's talking about. And then when you revisit it when you're an adult, you see Catcher in the Rye for what it is, which is a tragedy. This movie has that same impact. Like seeing it now, I see so much more of the commentary about what's going on as opposed to thinking you're in the midst of it and this is just how things are. And it's very, I think this film is extremely astute at the kinds of things it observes and the insights it gives you into teenage life.
Have either of you read the book?
No.
Last Times at Ridgemont High?
Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah, this whole thing was based on a book.
Yeah. Cameron Crowe went undercover.
Right.
He was out of high school, but he essentially did 21 Jump Street in a high school for a year and wrote this book about these people's lives.
Yeah, right. I definitely think I want to read it now. Well, I love Cameron Crowe. I mean, Almost Famous is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
Which gives more credence to it as an accurate depiction of teenage life in 1982, what have you.
The other thing that I think I had forgotten, and the thing that stuck out most for me was Rat's storyline, right? Mm-hmm. The Ratner character, is that his name, Ratner?
Mike Ratner.
He's the one who goes through that evolution. Like, he's the nice guy, but he can't quite make it. Yeah. But he's like the awkward guy. Like, he's too nice. He doesn't want to go through with it. And that's like, I think a lot of you know, boys can identify with that too. So Aaron, as much as we're talking earlier about, we want to like, let's play music to get the girls in the, like, the truth was, if you see, you know, everybody as your peer group, not as conquest. So he was in that mindset, and that was a much different mindset than I think definitely his friend and mentor in that situation, who he saw right through and said, "You're just a fucking creep. Like, I defend you all the time, and now you're turning to be exactly who you are."
So yeah, the real life guy it's based on ends up writing a bunch of dummies books. That's where he made all his money. He's like a famous, Andy Rathbone is his name.
He's like a billionaire.
Yeah, yeah.
So did it just the first totally one like dealing with dating for dummies?
No, it's like
I wish I had a copy.
No, Windows
for dummies.
Windows for dummies.
So we're gonna have to talk about Phoebe Cates at some point.
Yeah.
Now is that point. So the scene that I think is one of the best and most ironic scenes, because we'll get to the moving in stereo, is after Jennifer Jason Leigh and the scumbag have sex in the pool house, they're at the pizza place cutting a giant sausage into right.
Yeah.
So right now you already got this image of them with knives cutting into a giant like sausage like thing, and yet they're having this conversation about how long the guys last, and Phoebe Cates is like, you know, 30 to 40 minutes. And then she's like, oh, I thought she said 45 minutes. She's like, oh yeah, 45 minutes. So like,
right.
That shift in just arbitrary nature of the length is reveals a whole bunch of bullshit. And then she's like, why, how long did he last? And she's like, 20 minutes. She's like, oh, that's good for a high school boy. And then it occurred to me, and Aaron, you can just nod yes or roll your eyes if you like.
Yeah.
Were they saying minutes, but really meant seconds? Is that what's happening with that?
That part I don't understand. I don't get that. Like, because I'd be like,
each of them wants to think the others kind of.
I don't understand why to another girl. I don't know. That part didn't ring true to me at all, because I never, like, girls among girls, we don't misrepresent that. I've never experienced where we've misrepresented that to each other. I'm not talking anybody up. I'm telling my girlfriend the truth. I'm like, no, this is what went down. Like, I'm not trying to pretend somebody did. I'm never doing that. I don't understand.
That's the thing, isn't it? Like, the girls like are very detailed in telling each other the stuff that I didn't really find that experience with guys talking.
Yeah, I mean, if it was 20 seconds, I'm telling my friend that was 20 seconds.
Whoa. So I'm not
talking anybody up. I don't get that part. Like, why do you would do that? I don't get that. That didn't ring true to me at all, that they did. They would have that conversation.
I was like, that's bullshit. Curveball,
if you tell your 40
minutes. Here's the curveball, Aaron.
Like, what?
Do you believe, in the context of this movie, that Phoebe Cates' boyfriend is real? She lies about the length of time they have sex. That's why Jennifer Jason Leigh lies back.
Right.
She lies about, like, she gives the demonstration about how to do the blowjob at the beginning, which is maybe not that convincing, quite honestly. She says she lost her virginity when she was 13, which is, again, just a brag, humble brag, whatever. But there's no evidence at any point during this movie that she has done any of that stuff. And she could just be talking a good game and trying to be impressive to her friend. But she's actually living vicariously through Jennifer Jason Leigh, who's having these horrible experiences, quite honestly. And she's like, having her own fantasy of what it should be like, but there's no evidence at all that she's ever engaged with anybody.
Yeah, there's definitely that. That's true. Like, I think it's, well, yeah, I don't think it's like completely fabricated, but yeah, I mean, yeah, that's
not fabricated.
Because she's exaggerating everything. So yeah, she's exaggerating that as well.
She's exaggerating. To me, that's the tell. In other words, if she were like 15 seconds, that's normal. True. She's like, she doesn't know. And if for memory, even the first time she says, how much do they come? And she's like a gallon or a quart or whatever. Like that means something, right? I think her inexperience comes through in those parts. If she were truly the experienced person she's claiming to be, she would be confident, accurate, and she'd be a really good guide. She's actually a terrible guide for her best friend because she's giving her horrible advice every step of the way.
It didn't occur to me that she might have, like, it's almost like she's goading in her Jennifer Jason Leigh into doing stuff that she never actually did.
Look at you, Curtis. I think she's a bad influence.
Never thought for a million years that because Phoebe Cates was so hot. Like, of course, like she's probably
right. Well, the movie preys on that.
Whoever she wants, whenever she wants.
So now we get to the key scene, right? The key scene that boys remember is her coming out of the pool, opening her top and kissing Judge Reinhold. It happens, right? Because we see it, but it never actually happens, right? It is a boy's fantasy of what should go down. And then he is really in a really hilarious sequence, right? He's masturbating by himself in the bathroom, but the scene is doubly funny because it hits his fantasy, so it's obviously not happening. And then it cuts to him like jerking off in the bathroom by himself, which is great. And then she comes in looking for a Q-tip because she has water in her ear, and she catches him. And the real humor in the scene is that's hilarious. Like her reaction is comedic gold, but it's remembered more for her taking her top off than it is for the true comedy payoff and sequence, which is
I immediately thought when he's like, doesn't anybody fucking knock anymore? I'm like, you're an idiot for not locking the door, you shithead. Like,
look at you.
I mean, when I would be at pool parties and I just couldn't take it anymore and I had to run off for a bit, like I made sure that door was locked before
All right, are we gonna give this?
Yeah, we need to just take a break and have some water. and we're gonna come back and then we're gonna rate it.
That's right.
You are rating. So okay. All right, we will be right back, everybody.
Hello and welcome to Movie Phone. Remember me? I'm the movie phone guy. I'm still out here, waiting by the phone to tell you what time to go see your favorite movie. It used to be a symphony of rings in here. Now, crickets. Sometimes the weather woman and the time lady and I get a party line going just to discuss old times. We kicked out that witch Miss Cleo a while back, bless her heart. She was charging us 99 cents a minute. Anyway, I bought this time to let you know I'm still here. So, if you're out there, and if that Friday night blockbuster left you with a talking itch, give old movie phone a jingle. I could really use the company. Just for the chat, you see. No pressure to buy a ticket or anything. Just press 1. Please? Please.
So I'm here, and you're here, and you're here. That means it's our time. And it's time to put the rated into Rated Gen X. There's nothing wrong with a little rating on our time. Curtis, what do you want to give it? What are you going to roll?
I'll give it a full All Right Hamilton, 5 out of 5 kicks, brah. It served its purpose, and it still holds up. It's sort of an important part of our generation's history.
Suddenly he's British. I don't know where that came from.
Me neither. I can
split this. It was like surfer to British. Now we're a British surfer.
All right, Hamilton, shut up.
Oh, is that what you doing? Okay, I'll go with your same rating system. What was it? Kicks? Did you say kicks? What Cokes. Were they?
You give them Cokes.
Cokes.
Cokes. Oh, Cokes.
5 out of 5 Cokes. Kicks.
Oh, Coke. So.
At the German restaurant.
Yeah.
I'll give it four.
Four Cokes?
It's not, I mean, you gotta, I can't, yeah, you gotta save the perfection for.
I'm gonna give it a one, two, three. Do you hear that?
No, we didn't hear that at all. Okay, hold on. Do that again. We want the, like, you.
Can you hear it? Here, hold on. I have to hit the mic. How about that? Can you hear that?
Are you serious?
No, these mics. No.
All right, the noise suppression is not allowing me to hit my skull. With
all right, we're going to have to add in sound effects later. Who knew?
I'm just going to pull in the thing.
So, anyway, he was hitting his head. So
yeah, I'm going to give it five as well. Five shoe hits.
Five shoe hits to the head.
Five shoe hits.
That we can't hear.
But Curtis, tell us about, Curtis, you get to pick again?
Oh, yeah, Curtis. Yeah, we, for some reason, you get to pick back to back.
I know. I left out in the drawing of the beam. So. Next up is going to be a movie that really blew my mind, probably shaped a lot of my childhood and what I thought it means to be a man. Raiders of the Lost Ark, or Indiana Jones and the Raider of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, let's get rid of that retcon bullshit right now, so people understand. They have renamed Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark because they wanted to be consistent and show up on menus next to the Indiana Jones sequels. This movie is called Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. So it didn't have Indiana Jones and they added it later.
They've added that later because every sequel is Indiana Jones and.
Right.
What they want this is when you go to Netflix or wherever they're listed, they want them to be alphabetically
together. I appreciate that, though. As somebody who goes crazy over finding stuff on Netflix,
yeah,
I get it. I appreciate it.
Or Disney Plus, whatever.
I feel like they're looking out for me. I do. You seem to not like that. I feel like they're looking out for me.
I think they're just. I think they're retconning and they're trying to change.
No, it makes my life a lot easier because I'm just like, yeah. Because if I hold up that voice recognition thing, I'm saying Indiana Jones, and if it's not showing up, I'm pissed. So yeah, I feel like I appreciate it.
Briefly, this came out in what are we talking about? 1981. So yeah, just the year before the movie we just saw, and again. Totally age appropriate. We were age appropriate to go see this movie. We didn't have to sneak in.
Yeah, all right, guys. So we're going to wrap this up.
Yeah.
And
super excited.
We'll see you the next episode.
All right, y'all. See you next week.
See ya
next time.
Reign of Gen X is written, performed, and produced by Gabe Wardell, Aaron O'Reilly, and Curtis Eames. Post production by Gabe Wardell. Microphones by Sonic Presence. Cool tunes by Ryan Thomas Johnson. If you find Rated Gen X rad, tell a friend. Do we say something to offend you? Tell us about it. Got some suggestions for other movies we should do? Let's party, bud. Instagram and TikTok and YouTube are all open for business 24/7. Tell us what you think, dude. If your name is Mr. Hound, or you still have an AOL account, email us at hello@ratedgenxpod.com. To listen to Curtis's totally awesome mixtape inspired by Fast Times at Ridgemont High, visit the show notes on ratedgenxpod.com or find the link to his mixtape on Insta. Thank you for listening to Rated Gen X. This hereby concludes our podcasting day, dude.
Can't wait to crack that whip next week.
That's right.